mirrors.
Okay, everyone, welcome. Welcome to the cold moon, which is somewhere over yonder. And perhaps we'll see it visually, perhaps not. Tonight, we will have four readers here, and then we'll have four readers in the wetland section of this park, which is over in the forest over there, which is about 5 minutes slowly walking, less than if you quickly walk. The reader order is Justine Chan, and then Jason Kirk, and then Eric Westerland, and then Matt Treese over here on the beach. And then moving into the preserve, it is Lydia Swartz, Rachel Nelson, Abby Polakoff, and Paul Nelson to close the night. This event comes in a long sequence of events that have happened outside in the south end of Seattle for over 6 years now. And it also comes in a sequence of events that have occurred on an astral level. The last year there was a solstice event during the winter solstice. And unfortunately this year I won't be around in Seattle for that. So this was my way of saying, let's all gather in a almost equally dark night to share thoughts and emotions together. And with that short introduction, I would like to introduce the first reader, Justine. Justine Chan holds an MFA in prose from the University of Washington. She earned her BA from the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign in English and Creative Writing. Her work has appeared in Beecher's, Booth, Poetry on Buses, Sun, Star, and Midwestern Gothic, among others. Her nonfiction was nominated for the 2016 Pushcart. She is also a singer, songwriter, and busker. And I'm happy to see you after so long in this dark space. Everyone, welcome Justine, please.
Hey. Hey.
We have additional lights if you need them.
How does it click on?
It's just the vision.
Okay.
It's just a...
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you. I'm going to tell you a story first. So, to set it up, because my piece is written in response to a folk tale. It's from the... So, to give you background, I was a park ranger at Zion National Park this past summer. I gave an evening program about coyotes. And so I gave this program every week. The first section of it was coyote folklore, and I picked stories from the Southern Paiute, who like historically live in that area, and also like parts of Arizona, parts of California, Nevada. And so super important to the area because there's like millions of coyote stories out there. And this story, so all the stories that I told are winter tales, so it's really appropriate that it's at this time, and it's supposed to be like, they're told after the pinon nut harvest when like it's nice and quiet, it's just like rejuvenation periods, and you're supposed to imagine yourself like in the desert and it's snowing, and the best way to listen to the stories is lying down. And if you read the elders talking about winter tales, they say you have to lie down because otherwise you get a wrinkled butt. And you don't want it to be that way. And this story is why Coyote looks up when he howls. And it's more on the serious side, but it ended up being my favorite story. So this story begins somewhere in Utah, and it's a family of eight. So there's a mom, a dad, five daughters, and a son, and they're really happy living together. And one day, the dad gathers them all together and says, I'm very happy, but I'm also very old, I'm very tired, and I will die soon. And when I die, I want you to lay my body upon a brush pile in the woods, and then set that brush on fire. And then run away. Do not look back. And so when the dad actually dies, the family is really sad, but they do as he's told. They make a brush pile and they set his body on top of it and they set it on fire. And it's actually really scary because they could hear like the fire crackling and it was all bright and red and this fire is just eating everything. So the mom and the daughters run away and they don't look back. But it was a son, and you could say he was brave or very dumb, but he decides to look back at his dad. And he sees that his dad isn't dead, but instead he's sitting up from the brush pile and he sees his son looking at him. And the son can see that his dad is really angry. And he starts to run away. And he runs up and catches up to the rest of the family and says, "Hey, look, dad isn't dead, he's alive, and if he finds us, he's going to kill us." And so begins this very long, difficult chase where the family is running through the desert and the dad keeps following them. And they like, no, the dad loves him, but he's still super angry. And so they run and run, and eventually the family decides, like, hey, there's nowhere else we can run except up into the jump up into the sky so we won't leave any tracks. So the family jumps up into the sky, and when their dad finds the end of their tracks, he can't find them. But the family up in the sky, they're much more powerful, and they look down at the dad and call down, "Hey, look at us up here." And so he looks up and he's even more angry. And for some reason they laugh at him and they mock him. And he's too old to jump up. So he decides, "Hey, if you're not going to come down from there, I will shoot you down." And so shoots all these arrows at them, which they are able to turn the arrows into little stars. And so eventually, at a standstill, the dad says, "If you don't come down from there, I will turn you into the stars, so you can never come back down." And the son responds, "But if we were to come back down, you would kill us. And if you turn us into the stars, we will turn you into the wild coyote. And because you love this brushy country so much, that is where you will live. And you will run around the brush all night. And when daylight comes and we start to fade away, you will be very sad and very lonely. And you will howl and yip and cry. And so it is so. And so it is now. So if you see or hear coyote howling at the sky, it is because he misses his lost family." The end. So my poem is written in response to that. This is just part two of a longer series. This section is like, I don't know the title yet, but it's about the holes in the story, so you can think that's the title. Part one. I cannot account for the holes in the story. Plural stories or recount or count the holes are why I keep thinking about them. And how the nights are empty of coyote songs, and the predators seem too clever, too mythical, liquid ink in the night, and the mule deer wander too close, their mute black eyes sinking, ribs rippling under dark tufted fur. Yes, I'm the one out pacing under the stars on the phone every night. I will leave here soon, maybe too soon, before autumn blows through the canyon and leaves the cottonwoods yellow and the big tooth maples a brilliant red, before the snow in the river and snow thick across the Mojave and Great Basin. The nights are already cold. There will be no hole where I was, where I am. The rains will speckle up the sands fresh on the banks. The people here will stack up their little dams, litter the landscapes with cairns, trample their own trails to the river as if they could fill the holes in the stories. I too can superglue the cracks in my dry hands, walk the same trails and think too much about going, coming back when I am still here. I'm here. I haven't left yet. I just keep thinking about the stories where you can't look back, maybe at the holes, at the underworlds, at the ugly creatures you love following you up back. There are punishments. You can't jump the gun, you can't eat their food or sleep in their beds, you can't leave. There are no stars over the cities, and there will be great mounds of earth on cold, damp islands where there is no difference between dead and fairy. If I don't read the stories, the fairy lord, I forget the code. And yes, this is the desert, and cricket sounds all night, and Peruna wheat gapes assailing, a canyon you never dreamed of. And time stands still, more so this is eternal. The sun blares too bright, too yellow. The mind plays tricks, dreams of Joshua trees and dried up gorges, arroyos, landscape, limestone awash in reds, yellows, violets, a barbed wire fences and pronghorn, red rocks eroded to strange shapes. Think and stop thinking, stop running. There's a line you cross and you keel over, lean on your knees, head pounding, breath heaved. Listen, there are distant wildfires in all directions, colossal and unimaginable, drowning the cities. The faraway cities and everything in between in thick, harsh smoke. The sun then I heard is a burning, half faded, more beautiful. A burning, a sinking over the still lake. Listen, there are holes in your friend's stories you can't, won't know. Their lives will go on without you. They'll stop inviting you to things. The missing swallows everything. I checked, nothing is following me. I will simply stumble back to the city, then to another, even bigger city, where both feel like home, both full of holes, if there is such a thing as full of holes. That is the story. Nothing I can command, the holes in my head. And yet I keep thinking, if I just asked the right questions, I would have all the answers. Where have I been? Where I have been? What is the code? How much can I do? How much will I miss? Can you even hear me? Can I keep the windows wide open at night? Let the smoke trail in and sleep. Just be here in rapture, not tearing myself apart. This is part two. One hole. The father, once dead, sits up alive on the pile of burning brush. Sparks high in the crackling wind, the woods of pinon, pine, and juniper all bright red in flame. But why? Where is he going? One hole hovers over the South Pole, colossal enough to swallow Antarctica in late winter. The light comes down. One hole, the sun, the one who looks back, somehow knows he must immediately run away. Knows he cannot soothe his dad with any words or gesture. Cannot hold him, cannot kiss him, cannot shake him by the shoulders and boom. Look at me. No, look at me, please. Why are you doing this? One hole, this. The father, no matter how much he loves his son and the rest of his family, would chase and try to kill them, no questions asked. One hole. Every year, the high desert winters get shorter and warmer with less snowpack. More and more bark beetles, which are native to the area and feed on the pinon pine, survive hibernation into the spring. One hole. The rest of the family, the mother and the five daughters, all women, are punished, have to flee as well, even though they do not look back. One hole. The high desert summers are much hotter for long spans of time. The monsoon rain patterns have changed. quick, violent thunderstorms have replaced the steady rains that thoroughly soak the soil crust. One hole, having fled all through the desert only to realize that the father could always find them by their tracks, the family decides desperately to leap into the sky. And for some reason, the family, more celestial, more powerful up in the sky, calls down to the dad and laughs at him and mocks him. Of course he is too old and tired to jump up. One hole, the sun boils each day, all day long, year after year. The rainwater skims the earth in sheets. One hole, the family can turn the father's arrows into tiny stars, but they cannot, will not do anything else. One hole, drought-stricken, the pinon pines, even the healthy ones, will not, cannot produce the resins necessary to fight off the bark beetles. Once the beetles eat and tunnel through the bark, they destroy the tree's water-conducting tissue and burrow through the trunk and major limbs. The beetles further introduce the blue-stained fungus, which grows inside and plugs the tree's vascular system. Given even more potential stress from strong winds, mechanical injuries, root disease, low humidity, summer heat, and so on, the trees stand no chance. One hole, it must be summer, in the hazy high of it all. Dreams of water and prickly pear, all dark red and salty sweet. Or is it winter, after the pinon nut harvest? Are we lying on our backs on quilts and furs, fireside, listening for the elders? Do ice floes sing in the river? One hole, no questions asked. One hole, slopes of dead pinon by the thousands, millions, all sun-bleached gray trunks and reddish-brown leaves blurring. It's easy to speed here. One hole, it doesn't matter that when the story begins, the family is very happy together. The fact that the dad even says, "I am very happy." One hole. The fire from the first scene must have burned down the juniper and peon woods around the brush pile, and the fire leapt to the thick fields of cheatgrass already dried to phosphorescent yellow among the old man's sage and rabbit brush in the valleys. And the fire blazed through the long stretches of chaparral and old burn areas, through the acres and acres of dead peon forest, through the wildflowers, local weed, ferns, gamble oak, ponderosa, spruce, and Douglas fir on the rim. One hole. The story ends focused solely on the dad, his longing and loneliness, his cries and howls after the family turns him into a wild coyote. It is unclear whether, once turned into stars, the family, A, can no longer speak, B, they choose not to, C, they, cold and bright, no longer have feelings, or D, their own grief in response to their dad's grief was considered unimportant to the narrator, and thus the story. One hole, the fire burns all summer, and its wake all char. Whether the people consider the fire part of the natural cycle determines whether or not they will try to fight it, keep it cornered. One hole, there must have been volcanoes here, a time when molten lava mantled the earth, bubbling bright in sumac. The lava hardened to rough-hewn, patched dark, to hills of black hunks, sharp rocks clinking underfoot. The pioneers would not cross such lands. One hole, the story does not mention the fire, where it goes. The fire swallows the earth. The smoke engulfs the sky. The time for us to be out, alive, drinking, is when the sun, all soft red, sinks through the haze. One hole. There are no coyotes left in the canyon. They move to New York City and ride the subways all night, jittery, ears perked to the clanking, the rush of wind through the tunnels. They find the bits of blue mussel strewn shore under the steel bridges, and watch the black water and the lights glistening. One hole, so it was, and so it was so. Thank you.
Thank you, Justine.